Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Our focus is the Immigrant and Refugee Women's Program. It takes on the challenge of refugee and immigrant women fitting in through one-on-one home tutoring. Joining me in studio from the organization are Sarah Paradosky, the Program Director for the Immigrant and Refugee Women's Program. Ramona Marshall is a program volunteer. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Sarah, let me begin with you and ask you for an overview of your organization.
Sure. So we are teaching immigrants and refugees English and basic life skills. What makes us a little different is we're coordinating volunteers to do that one-on-one with a student, and we are going into the homes of our students. So the niche that we're trying to fill, who we're really serving, is those who are facing barriers to getting out into the community to go to regular English classes. So they're really remaining more isolated, not able to meet their goals and kind of assimilate into the community like they would like to.
Well, I guess the language is the principal barrier that people face coming into this country.
It is, and just it can be very intimidating when you're not understanding the language and there's a lot of cultural things to figure out, just daily life skills.
What are those other skills? You mentioned language being number one, but what are some of the other basic things that are immediate problems for these folks?
Shopping on their own, transportation, knowing where to go. You know, their children will be going to school here, so being able to communicate and with their teachers, with the school, with helping with their education, employment. So there's a lot of things that come into that, those daily life skills.
It's everything. It's everything.
It is.
It's everything
life.
Folks do day to day. Absolutely. Ramona, how long have you been a volunteer?
It's been about 7 months now since I started with them. I heard about them on 88.1, just driving home from work one day, and they were talking something very similar to this, like a PSA, and that's how I heard about them.
So you listen to other radio stations
yeah.
as well.
sorry. Yeah, no, loyalty is here, but yeah.
we'll forgive you. We'll forgive you this time. It sounds like, as a volunteer, you would have your hands full.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Sarah said, you know, it's really not just about teaching them English, but about making that bridge. You know, it's about incorporating them into the community, making them feel like more of a part of the community, and really touching someone's life one-on-one.
How do you go about that? I mean, what qualifies you to do what you're doing?
Well, I actually do have my certification to teach English, and I've also studied a lot of other languages, so I think that's kind of what led me to do this, was that I understand how it feels to be that kind of intimidation and getting your first foot on the ladder, you know, of learning a language. And understanding that kind of fear that comes with it and trying to, you know, be really friendly and ease them out of it and just break them in slowly to learning English.
How many people do you work with? I know it's a one-on-one situation, but do you just have one person at a time?
Yeah. I actually just have one student. She's a retrian. She had been in the country for 9 years, and she really couldn't even speak a word of English, honestly,
wow.
When I started working with her. She rarely left her room in her retirement community. And I just thought, you know, imagine that, being in a country for 9 years and not reaching out to people around you, not being able to communicate and feeling that sense of helplessness and isolation is really overpowering. And so going into her home and helping her was really, you know, the first step. And now we're able to have basic conversations. She can count to 500. She's able to talk about shopping, about basic things, how to talk to a doctor, parts of the body, all those things. And she's starting to build and, you know, speak in full sentences on her own without being prompted.
What would hold her back for 9 years? Has she explained that to you?
No, not really. I have spoken at length with her interpreter. So we actually had a really great moment, you know, when her interpreter was overseas, and when she came back, she did the whole thing. She brought out a table that's from Eritrea, did the whole coffee service, roasted the coffee beans in the house, burned incense, and did all of that. And so I did learn a little bit more about her life, because her English still isn't at a level where I can really ask her too many in-depth questions. But I think it was just kind of waiting for somebody to come and help her. You know, she was afraid. She was afraid to go out. Yeah. Her language to Greenian is so different from English that I think that was a big barrier.
Is she a refugee or an immigrant?
She is a refugee.
So she might have come from a situation that was complex, let's put it that way.
It was, yeah. It was actually really heartbreaking to learn more about her situation. You know, it's, yeah. She's had, like the woman said, this woman has suffered a lot. And she only went up to sixth grade in her schooling in her country. So imagine that, on top of the languages being so different and all of the other barriers it's just a lot to overcome.
Sarah, is this more or less typical of this story here, or the kinds of things that Ramona's been talking about?
It is. Now, our students are very diverse, the backgrounds that they're coming from, their life situations. Most of ours are refugees and are coming here from situations that were a little bit harder. But some of ours never went to school, so that struggle is a little harder. Some were professionals in their own country, but they come here. Those credentials don't count anymore. They don't have the language, so they kind of lose their identity. So, and everything in between. So that's the nice thing, too, about the one-on-one is we can really tackle the needs that they have and kind of meet them where they are. And I think Ramona's student, just her situation, she had more self-isolation and fear. Some of ours have more of that than others, but a lot of them, even those that have more English spoken skills and maybe their literacy needs more help, but they're always very self-conscious about their English ability. So I think the beauty of the program of working one-on-one, building that relationship, is fostering that self-confidence in them and giving them a safe space to practice and learn and just be encouraged and feel that they can do things. And we hear that. We hear, now I'm going to the parent-teacher conferences. Now I did go shopping without bringing my husband, whatever it might be.
And that's where the one-on-one comes in, because otherwise in a group setting they might be embarrassed or might be too shy or whatever to fully participate.
Yes, that's very common. If for some of ours that had been able at some point to go to classes, sometimes they were very overwhelmed or just were not really able to ask questions. And most of ours need the in-home classes because they aren't able to go to those classes for one reason or another. So but I do think, obviously, we can address their specific, background that they're coming from.
How do you match the volunteers with the people they would be working with?
So I have a very long waiting list of students. I just get a lot of referrals from other
potential volunteers. You mean
for students?
Oh, okay, yeah, of course.
And I get those from other groups in the community. I get those from networking within families or communities. And then I'll be looking for, when I have a volunteer that comes to us, I have my list of people waiting. So the way that I match them is kind of personalities, just schedules, locations that would match. So the volunteer is not spending a ton of extra time, just trying to travel, whatever it might be. And, Ramona has this background that's really helpful, but to volunteer with us, you don't have to have been a teacher, have another language. Really, we do provide the curriculum and training and material. So when I match them and everything works out, then we train them, give them what they need that they can teach, and they don't have to have done that before.
Right. Ronna, how much time do you spend with your student in a week, let's say, and how much time would you anticipate it would take before you're finished?
Oh, well, I go to her house twice a week, 2 hours each day, but the requirement is actually just 1 hour each day. It's because she feeds me every time I come over. So
that
I
works.
Have to allow, I have to allow extra time, because I don't want to shorten the lesson for that.
Sure.
And it's her way of thanking me, it's kind of her way of payment or thanking me for that. So, and then my student does have a long way to go. Eventually she does want to become a citizen. So I've started, kind of briefly, incorporating different elements of citizenship, talking about basic vocabulary, the questions, practicing writing, things like that. But she, I think I could definitely be working with her for the next couple of years, honestly, before she would be ready to, just study exclusively on her own. So
does she have family? Is she living with family?
She actually lives in a retirement community, but she has a daughter that lives in Belleville, and her son lives in, I believe, Iowa. So I think he got a job there when they relocated here, so he had to move.
Are they of help to you?
Her daughter does come around, but it would be nice, I think. It was hard to see how much she was struggling at first. So I think that she was very grateful when I came along for the extra help. Her family is definitely present and is helping as much as they can. But her daughter has two children. She's kind of got her hands full as well. So I think sometimes it's difficult.
Do her kids have the skills that she lacks? Language and otherwise?
I think a lot of our students, especially even if they have kids who are younger, they might rely pretty heavily on their kids for interpreting or those sorts of things, which is not very good for them or the children. You know, it's a lot of burden from them, and they're learning on their own. They tend to pick it up quickly because they're young and they're in school all day. Mm-hmm. But it does kind of throw off the balance of the family dynamics when the parents are having to rely on the children. You know, that's not preferred for any of them. So I think that, and they really want to be able to help their kids in school too. So I think, mm-hmm. I think that the family does all that they can, but to have that kind of independent person who isn't related to you and isn't a child or someone who will judge you or get frustrated.
Right.
That's really a big deal.
In your planning and making these assignments, how long would you typically think that the volunteer would be staying with a student, or does it vary widely?
It really varies. we don't have a commitment time other than a few months at least. We kind of go by life for the student and for the teacher. Now, if a student were going towards their goals, what they're hoping to achieve, if they achieve something and they're ready to transition out, then we do that. Or if they're keeping going with goals, we'll keep going. So it does kind of vary. It's usually a few years. And if their teacher has to stop, then I will rematch them with a new teacher. Same with the teacher. If their student meets their goal and transitions out and they want to keep going, we'll find a new student for them.
How long have you been at this?
7 years.
Really?
And I've been volunteering for 8 years, and I started working there 7 years ago.
Why only women?
Well, we actually don't teach just women.
Well, that isn't what I have here.
We do teach more women than men. I just think that then we get a lot more referrals for women. I think the need is just greater there because they tend to be home with children more often, or they're facing more barriers to getting out and becoming unisolated. So I think that the need is big with the women. But wherever we have a male in need, we take them on our waiting list. And then actually we do have male teachers work with male students. So when we have a male volunteer, we have a place for them too.
Who are your volunteers typically?
They're really diverse, just like our students. We have everyone from age 19 into their 80s. Some are working, some are parents, some are in school, some are college students, some are nuns. I mean, we really have a variety, but who they are is people who are caring and want to help empower another person.
I noticed the numbers that I have here indicate that you've got just about exactly the number of volunteers on hand as you have clients, fewer by a couple.
Yes. So typically people are working with one person. You know, 2 hours a week is a pretty intense volunteer commitment, but we do try and keep that as light as possible. We do have some that have more than one because they have more time to do that. Mm-hmm. So anyone who wants to do more than one, we make that happen. But typically, you're kind of fostering that relationship with one person.
Yeah, you're looking for volunteers, I'm sure.
Always.
All righty. How do they find you? You have a website?
We do. www.irwp.net. Check us out there. We also have a Facebook page, and you can always call us anytime to ask questions, see if we have someone who might fit in with your location and schedule. We are primarily in St. Louis, but we do go out to the counties. We have students on our waiting list. We have some, even a couple over in Illinois. So we can always ask the question.
We'll put all of that contact information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. How many people do you have waiting for volunteers to come and help them?
Our waiting list is actually down a little bit right now. We've had a lot of interest in people contacting us. I think this is just an issue that refugee issues is something that's on people's hearts and minds right now, and they want to help locally and connect. So right now I have about 68 on my waiting list. I also have a dozen or so others that are in between teachers that I'll need to rematch. So it's closer to 90, really, of students who are in need of teachers. And I get a lot of referrals every month. So that number, even when we're matching people, I'll always have more.
Ramona, what about your own commitment? I mean, obviously, this is time-consuming for you. I assume you enjoy it because you've been doing it for 7 months now. But is this something you can stay with this particular student for an extended period of time? Can you make that commitment?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the really nice things about working one-on-one is seeing somebody's progress. You know, you really see them progress very quickly since you don't have to deal with a lot of the difficult classroom dynamics. You can tailor a lesson specifically to what they need to work on. So I definitely, and I'm actually majoring in public policy, getting my graduate school right now. So I'm looking to do something like this, work in the nonprofit sector. And this issue has just been really important to me. So I'd like to stay in that area.
So you're a full-time student?
Yes. I'm part-time. I have to work.
Well, students these days, they do
yes,
have to
do.
Work.
Yes,
yeah, there's
no
question about it. Well, it's, it just sounds like a terrific program.
It is.
You know, one of the things that you have to learn about dealing with people from other countries, you have to learn something about their culture.
Absolutely.
I know that there are certain things you shouldn't do with certain people. Don't touch a child on the head because they think that's going to be some sort of a problem, create some. Have you run into that, and do you have to study the culture of the people you're dealing with, the person
yeah.
you're dealing with?
I just really wanted to know more about the language, a little bit of the brief history of the country, the politics, sort of what happened that sent her here. And so I did learn that. I have been learning a little bit of Tigrinyan. It's mostly restricted to animals. I don't know why. She really likes learning about different animals. So
Tigrinyan is the language.
Yes, correct.
That's a new one on me. I've never
yeah, me
heard
too.
That.
I had to look it up. Yeah, yeah. That's the language of Eritrea. So I think it's divided northern and southern. They have different dialects. So I believe she was from the south.
Can you see a word or two in that
yeah,
language for us?
Asama is, I want to say that's a pig. And then Argats is another one, yeah. and Armas. Uh-huh. And so some of them, I try and do that too to show her, to have a little bit of fun with it and kind of break the tension. You know, I can try and speak in your language and you're trying to speak in mine. We don't always say it perfectly. We laugh about it. We make mistakes and it's okay. And that's really helped her self-confidence, I think.
Where do you start with her in learning English? Do you teach her animal names because that's something she's interested in?
It was, I started with the alphabet, and one important thing is to always review. You know, you don't just say, okay, so I've taught you this, check it off the list, we're done. You have to constantly reinforce that point. So I go back, distinguish between B and V, distinguish between these letters. We're still doing that now, 7 months later, just to really reinforce it. And we started with colors. You start with little chunks of language, just basic vocabulary words, and then you're plugging that in to set full sentences. So you really start off with just the basic vocabulary, and they provide that in the materials. So yeah, colors, things around the house, animals, different things.
Sarah, is there a training period for the volunteers to go over such things as cultural information?
When a teacher starts, if there's some cultural points that I am aware of, I will let them know. Most of our students are just so unbelievably welcoming. Mm-hmm. And for instance, I always take my shoes off when we go in to the house.
That's the kind of thing I mean. There are things that you should know.
Yes.
You don't want to insult them.
But for
them.
The most part, it's not as intimidating as it sounds. Let's just say that. And our students are just so warm and welcoming and just make our volunteers part of their family, really.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. The biggest thing is, I will let people know some background, and we have some materials for that. But the biggest thing is just kind of connecting as a human being. And I think that our volunteers find out pretty fast that they have more in common than they have mm-hmm. differences.
We've only got about 30 seconds left. How do the students find you? I mean, is it word of mouth, or you work with the International Institute or something like that?
We will get referrals from the Institute for people who aren't able to attend their classes, or they'll give our information out. Other groups working with their kids or health, we get a lot of referrals from those, or just, word of mouth and families and neighbors and friends.
In a few seconds, you have some success stories, I'm sure.
Oh, we have so many. And we've had some that went from learning the alphabet to enrolling in community college getting jobs and just, really meeting their goals.
Sounds terrific. I want to thank you both so much for being with us. Sounds like a great program.
Thank you.
Congratulations
so much.
For both of you for that commitment to you, Ramona, and Sarah, of course, from you. We've been talking with Sarah Paradowski from the Immigrant and Refugee Women's Program, and also Ramona Marshall, who is a program volunteer. Thank you so much. Terrific seeing you. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.